This is the podcast for October 12th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the snows of Afghanimanjaro, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Paul Ryan, Afghan weatherman.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
What season is it in Afghanistan? There's seasons, and they don't like to fight in the snow.
The snow comes, and then comes the rains, and then...
And then comes the army.
The spring comes, and with it, the opium, and the many other exports that Afghans... And in the end, Paul Ryan did conclude, Afghanistan, a land of contrasts.
He really was faking it. It was bad.
You read his little book report that somebody prepared for him about Afghanistan.
Conclusions.
and that, of all the passion and other things that are, we'll talk about the Biden style and debate and so forth, Paul Ryan clearly had prepared blocks of text he had memorized.
Mm-hmm.
His conclusion was such, as every high school debater knows, at least for my generation, the first affirmative. You get up and read a 8-minute prepared speech. It's the same speech every week. You memorize it. You say it with gestures and emphasis, but there's no improvisation involved at all. It is a straight up. And clearly what Paul Ryan had done, down to his gestures and the looks in his eyes and the way he sort of had that smirking, asinine nod to his head, trying to act like he was not punching way out of his weight class. He had these memorized blocks of text, which work fine. But what Biden did, which I think was brilliant, was break the rhythm up. He turned it into a conversation. He and Martha Raddatz, who, big ups to Martha Raddatz, this is the very last time the GOP is ever going to allow a real journalist to moderate anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
she jumped in the middle of it and said, no, I want an answer. I want you to explain how this math works as it doesn't work. And she did the same thing to Biden. I want a clear answer from you. And it turned into a conversation, a real three-way conversation with someone keeping time and moderating, but really moving it along. And that kind of rhythm completely fucked Paul Ryan up because he had set piece army bits ready to roll out. And Biden just screwed up his timing. And so
that's interesting. Yeah.
And you can see where he –
you can see how many times he took a drink of water to sort of re-catch his breath and his rhythm, as you say. Yeah.
And you could tell when his canned stuff came out because it was so audibly at odds with the rest of the conversation. You know, if it's as if you and I were having a conversation and suddenly I decided to read from the phone book or read from the Constitution. That's fine. But you can absolutely tell where this memorized briefing book thing that I was forced to memorize comes into play. And that's what I think goofed him up from the very beginning. Was the idea that no, I'm going to – Biden's going to just throw marbles on the parade route. You know, he's not going to play by any fixed set of timing. And you can see that in Ryan saying, well, it isn't very helpful if we allow interruptions to happen, Martha, which is hilarious considering
– all of his speeches were 4 minutes long to allow for that. And, of course, Romney continually interrupted Obama in his debate. So I was forced by circumstances this morning. We had to take the trusty minivan to the repair shop.
The ancient
venerable minivan to the repair shop. And the repair shop had Fox News on this morning. And I had to watch 45 minutes of Fox News because someone else was sitting there watching it. Oh my gosh. I really admire people who have to do that for Crooks and Liars and other blogs where they actually, watch it all day long because it was so awful. And really, it was about reading the Republican National Committee press release this morning, mm-hmm. which was about 82 times, the number of times Paul Ryan was interrupted by the incredibly rude.
Disrespectful.
Never seen anyone so disrespectful. Of course, they liked it when it was the president getting interrupted by Romney.
Sure.
But it really was bad. And uh-huh. and then they do I dare talk about the other thing that they talked a lot about was the one area of the debate where it appeared Paul Ryan got the upper hand, which is the you just have to admit it, the clusterfuck that is Syria.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the Benghazi thing, and they had Mary Catherine Ham on from Hot Air to talk about Benghazi.
Uh-huh.
I guess, as you said, Catherine Jean Lopez was busy.
Yeah. She was at home. She was at home crying over what a bad Catholic Joe Biden.
She was at home doing the rosary for Paul Ryan.
You're not a real Catholic, Joe Biden.
So anyway, I just have to kind of wash my brain out with bleach this afternoon, I think, to get that all of that out of my head. But I do want to say I really admire people that watch and analyze Fox News, to, you know, all the people at Newsbusters and everyone who's just gone to town on Fox News. That's hard work. I really appreciate what they do. Can we get into the meat of the debate for a minute?
And it's important work because...
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
You have to understand it when you are engaging across a great long battlefield, which is exactly what we're doing. You have to understand the ground you're on. You have to understand why it is when you lob facts at people on the other side, it just bounces off.
It's impervious.
Off.
Yep.
What the hell? What do you mean? And it is important to know, really, on a very, I don't do this anymore because it's repetitive, but I appreciate the fact that people like Heather at Crooks and Liars and other people, Media Matters, are tracking the outrageous lies of Team Romney. I do appreciate that. But as I noted in a post, I appreciate it on a sort of Josephus historical level. I don't think anyone – I'm tired of some people in our liberal media pretending that at the end of compiling all these facts, they can present the GOP with a bill of indictment. And the GOP will present some judge somewhere, some referee, some umpire.
You got me now. That's right.
And, oh, you caught me. Yeah, I've been lying for 30 years. Oh, God, you busted me. I'm so ashamed. Now I'm going to go into the political wilderness and, you know, atone. There is no judge. There is no referee or umpire. And this fantasy that if we just document one more lie, that'll do it. Now, it's important to do, but it's important to do almost from, like I said, like Josephus, like documenting the sack of Jerusalem, you know, going through the rubble and getting out a couple of books, because they're lost. They're never coming back. So doing
And they have no accountability in the world that they live in to come back.
They have nothing.
It's not like there's a referee, as you say. I did keep saying to myself, don't these people believe in karma? Because clearly when they do their planning for the day of what are we going to do today, it's a propaganda meeting. I mean, it is clear to me in watching this for 45 minutes that they were not looking for how do we cover the story of the debate.
At all.
It is how do we refract this light to bend it the way we want it to go. So we're going to talk about how many times Joe Biden interrupted Paul Ryan. And we're going to talk about how rude he was. And we're going to talk about Americans being killed in Benghazi and how Barack Obama doesn't care about that.
Yeah.
And we'll have anybody on to say that. We will have, and I say this knowing that I am this person on the left. But no one's going to invite me to come on television and talk about Benghazi, and I wouldn't let them.
No.
I'm not an expert in that, and there's no way that I would ever deem myself worthy to come on television and talk about... I'm sorry, I have a cat here. We have a kitten.
We do.
And he's going to interrupt the podcast from time to time.
Yes. He has stuff to say. He's very, very full of energy and information.
Yes, he's got that energy.
And he knows Afghanistan is a land of contrast.
Yes, he does.
He wants you to know that.
He can tell you the seasons, yes.
I have vital information about the budget that you must hear.
Well, speaking of that, I do want to get into just a little bit of the meat of the debate.
Okay. I want to touch on just two more things in the coverage of it.
Okay.
And that is... the first being exactly what you said about Fox News and the way it is approached. You have to understand why this doesn't work. And second, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, so you have to understand why the right doesn't respond to what you consider to be reason and facts. It's a holy water enema for them. They don't – it terrifies them. And when you pry their memory open and and force them to deal with one fact at all, any fact at all that conflicts with their ideology, they freak out. They call you a liar. They call you in. But mostly what they do is say, well, both sides do it, which is why it is equally important to document the centrist bullshit that permits the right wing bullshit to stand.
I'm sorry. I can't stop thinking about holy water enema. What is that?
That's well, you know, giving a vampire a holy water enema.
Oh, my painful. God.
It's just that painful. I was going to go with a hot tub, holy water hot tub, because that's got more, you know,
no,
it's more onomatopoeia.
Holy water enemas. That's a punk band right there.
Yeah, there you go. I just want to, and we're going to talk a little bit about Tom Brokaw and the meat of the debate in 10 seconds. But I wanted to point out how far our media has fallen. The right-wing media is a lost cause, but the centrist media, the ones who control ABC, NBC, CBS, control, who frame the debate, who decide who gets to be at the table, because Blue Gal, you and I are never going to be at that table.
Right.
But if you go back, I wrote this post that was picked up by Daily Kos, and bless his heart, Meteor Blades put it on the front page. But I reposted something that the late, great Stephen Gilliard did just after the 2004 election. It wasn't him. It was one of his commenters, but it was a long, angry, like, I can't fucking believe my fellow citizens are this stupid post. This is 2004. This is 8 years ago. And 8 years ago, it was, can you believe the shit that Ann Coulter gets away with, for example? You know, saying that she regrets that Timothy McVeigh didn't take out the New York Times building.
Right.
That's Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter is now a regular guest on legitimate Sunday morning television and has never atoned for that, has never walked any of it back, is proud of what she says. And that's because the centrist media, the people who control the major networks and the major newspapers, will not permit an honest discussion to happen about the psychosis that has destroyed the Republican Party, because it fucks up their stock portfolio, because it screws up their message. So when considering last night's debate, you have to consider both what Fox News does with the bare facts and what Tom Brokaw does with the bare facts. And now let's jump into last night's debate.
Well, I wanted to talk specifically about Medicare because I thought that was the absolute strongest moment for Biden.
Yeah.
And weakest moment for Ryan. And everyone knows. I mean, this is an everybody knows moment. Everyone knows that Paul Ryan and the Republican Party have tried to voucherize Medicare, and they voted yes on that.
And remember, not just voucherize Medicare today, but they opposed Reagan. Ronald Reagan rose to national prominence by calling Medicare socialism.
Right, in the 60s, absolutely.
They have hated this program since the beginning, just like they hated Social Security since the 30s. They have been dead set against it since the day it started. So that's a fact.
The big lie that you know, came to our attention when we read Al Franken and the Truth With Jokes. In The Truth With Jokes, there's a whole chapter about this because Al Franken wrote that book as George Bush was trying to privatize Social Security.
Uh-huh.
And the big, huge lie of we're not going to change benefits for anyone 55 and above. So You're safe. And that was always part of the propaganda for any effort to change these programs and to reduce benefits for these programs is to convince the people who are getting them or about to get them, this won't affect you at all.
Right.
And that's supposed to turn off the resistance on the part of seniors. And what has been discovered politically on this is that seniors, when you talk about Medicare and Social Security, they don't think in terms of generations. They think in terms of class. And they want their children to have the same benefits that they are currently receiving. So,
do you remember where the Bush administration got that magic number from? 55?
No.
From Lenin. From Lenin.
Oh my God.
From Lenin. It was, and they said it in their strategy sessions. What we have to do is adopt this Leninist strategy or tactic of telling everyone above a certain age that our revolution will not harm them.
Yeah.
It'll only be for young people, and then we can pit one group against another and win.
Yep.
And they said, oh, this is a brilliant idea. Let's tell old people that we're only going to screw young people because you know how much people hate their children.
Right.
And it just blew
that's
up in their
face. That's the point. That's the point. And it did blow up in Bush's face. And so Paul Ryan repeated the lie again last night. And here's the direct quote. We are not. We're saying don't change benefits for people 55 and above. And here's the sentence that of all the things he said last night, insulted me the most. He said, we're saying don't change benefits for people 55 and above. They already organized their retirement around these promises. That's what he said. And I went on Twitter, and I want to say this again to everyone listening to the podcast. I want everyone who's listening to me who's under 55 to ask themselves, how have you, quote unquote, organized your retirement in this economy? Especially if you haven't worked full time in 3 years. How have you organized your retirement? Where's your retirement? How have you organized your retirement? I've organized my retirement by expecting to receive the same Social Security and Medicare that my mom gets. That's how I've organized my whole retirement plan.
Yeah.
And my mom expects that for me, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's and the media, Tom Brokaw thinking, oh, we all have to share the milk on our cereal. I want to thank, we're thanking Heather all morning. Heather at Video Cafe, who has, from day one, has supported this podcast. I just want to thank her publicly. Yep. Sent me an email and said, Fran, I mean, she just wrote, Fran, you need to see this. Brokaw on Morning Joe this morning used the words extremists on both sides about 5 or 6 times as he opined about how we'd better be willing to share our milk on our cereal at breakfast. Because, you know, the social safety nets are just like Cheerios.
You know, Blue Owl.
Well, and I, you know, Tom Brokaw, I was trying to find, because, again, sitting in the car repair shop, there were copies of Architectural Digest, and these enormous decorated homes are sitting on the coffee table while I'm watching Fox. And I wondered if Tom Brokaw's house was in Architectural Digest. It turns out it's not his house in Montana. But there was an article in a Montana magazine, Montana Tourist Magazine, because he was born in Montana and he has a ranch in Montana and you know, he's very Montana oriented when he's not in New York, you know, being Tom Brokaw. So he has his own commercial satellite dish for his ranch so that he has internet and cable from, you know, which I realize is work necessary. He has his own commercial satellite. And they said, now, your ranch out in Montana, your Montana ranch, because this is Montana Magazine, you know, your ranch is a working ranch, right? Well, you know, I'm not a working rancher, but we lease 2,000 acres to a working rancher. 2,000 acres he leases to somebody else to put cows on. And I sat there reading that, and I'm thinking, okay, you're sitting there leasing 2,000 acres of land to some guy to have cattle on your land, and you want me to share my milk?
Yes. You know, because it's all share and sacrifice, Blue Gal. It really is. We have to share. And again, it's there's nothing wrong with having a robust and interesting debate about anything at all. I have no trouble sitting down with anybody of goodwill and debating the future of any legislation, of any social program. I don't. But when you lead in with a roundhouse over and over again about decrying the extremes on both sides, you're a fucking liar.
Absolutely.
And you have no business being on the television, Mr. Brokaw. You should get the fuck off television. And that's the problem. The battlefield is larded up. On one side, you have absolute psychotics who are clear and upfront about what they intend to do. They intend to turn women's vaginas into Catholic monasteries, and they intend to
No, I want to correct you on that.
Yes.
Poor women's vaginas.
Poor women's
middle
vaginas.
Class women's vaginas. That's because it's never about, you know, the McCain daughters.
No.
And their vaginas, because they can do whatever they want.
Paul Ryan.
Meghan McCain can flash her tits on Twitter and do a dirty, sexy Republican book of the month club and, you know, all of that crap. And she can have no one questions that she's sexually active. Her sexual activity is not brought into question because she's Republican and she's rich.
That's right.
This is abortion policy and contraception policy are always about people in the lower rungs, women in the lower rungs.
So they're very clear. They want – Paul Ryan wants to build Republican reliquaries in poor women's vaginas.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
And they're very clear that the social safety net of any kind, Social Security, is an abomination. Medicare is an abomination. Medicaid is an abomination times 10 because it's for poor people, but it's really not. But they say it is. So they would just want to get rid of all that. And they do that by floating insane numbers that make no sense at all. And every time someone calls it on it, you have Jack Welch, you have some crackpot billionaire crawling out from under a rock someplace croaking about how the secret Chicago conspiracy, blah, 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 blah. That's who they are, and that's who they're always going to be. But the battlefield is tilted in their favor because you have clowns like Tom Brokaw and David Gregory and David Brooks and David Frum, whole fucking lot of Davids out there, and on and on and on, who have their thumb on the scale. Because every time Republicans pull some shit like this, their immediate reaction is, yeah, but, you know, the extremes on both sides. And that's why if you scratch an undecided voter or you scratch a conservative and say, what about this latest atrocity? Their immediate reflex reaction is going to be, well, you know, liberals are just as bad.
But the Democrats.
And when you ask them for one example, they get that look on their face. They get that zombie look on their face that, oh, fuck, I don't actually know of any facts. And then they run away or they hide or they bluster or whatever.
That but was my favorite part of the debate last night, too.
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
when Ryan pulled the this my plan is bipartisan bullshit.
Yeah.
And what did he do? What did the vice president do? Name one.
Bullshit.
There isn't one. There isn't one. Yes, the guy from Oregon. Oh, you had one guy. He's not with you anymore.
Yeah, none.
And you had the audacity to sit there and bullshit about it's a bipartisan plan because you had Ron Wyden on your boat
right.
for 1 minute and he's not yeah. there anymore.
Well, that was the whole purpose of having Joe Lieberman there
yeah.
In the Senate at all. It was you can always pull Lieberman into some fucked up foreign policy neocon idea and call it bipartisan.
Bipartisan. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And the one thing that Biden tried to do that he didn't do hard enough and he didn't get a chance to do it was say, you know what? Maybe things would have gone a little smoother if you people hadn't fucking filibustered us 400 times.
Yep.
Maybe instead of throwing cinder blocks into traffic, if you'd actually cooperate, because this smirking little ass whining about, you know, my boss, Mitt Romney, loves bipartisanship and he works very hard with the left, dabba, dabba, dabba. And he dropped the house on it, but it was a small house. It was
yeah.
a dog house. And he really should have just laid into
it
with that.
And as an aside, he kind of snuck in, you know, you guys have a 7% approval rating in the house.
Yeah. And which is all true.
Yeah.
But the only
he
people
have
who
dropped a bigger house on him on that.
Yeah. yeah. And because if you're focusing on the nine undecided morons in this country who just can't quite make up their mind, then you have to explain to them. And this is what Biden did very well. Extremely well. I mean, he explained in very simple, clear, stark language with a lot of passion. He told his stories simply and clearly. He didn't throw numbers. He didn't expect, like Obama did, that, well, everyone's just going to go off and research this on their own and figure out that my opponent's lying because, you know, I can't sit here and say that. That would be unpresidential. So I will just assume that my audience will go off like my college students and do their own research over the weekend and come back with a book report on what Romney said and what he meant and the lies he told. Bullshit. Joe Biden understands the people who are listening to the debates, who aren't political junkies, are people who have no fucking idea that the Republican Party has stalled or stopped or filibustered every goddamn thing that Democrats have tried to do for 3 years, almost without exception.
And it's really almost time for someone on one of those debates, a Democrat, to say abuse of power.
Yeah.
That the Senate Republicans have committed an abuse of power by overusing the filibuster in cases where it was never supposed to be.
And they've
watered it down to where it's just easy to filibuster everything and you don't have to spend the night in the Senate chamber.
And say, yeah. you know, and if you are elected president, Governor Romney, the crazy people that run your party now will pilot you like a predator drone.
Yeah,
they will
yeah.
operate you like a cyborg. And you will do their bidding because you've done their bidding all along. And when they tell you that you're going to sign this massive tax cut for rich people, you'll say, yes, sir. And when they tell you that we're going to outlaw abortion from coast to coast, you will say, yes, sir, because that's the sort of person you are. And leave it at that. But mm-hmm. you have to remind people that the reason that things are moving much more slowly in the direction of recovery than they might is because there's this massive roadblock in the way that's deliberately sabotaging any effort to fix this country because it's to their political advantage.
Republicans, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you have all of the political capital you need to do that, Mr. Yeah. President.
Yes, you beat them.
Congress beat them has like a 7% Republican. The Republican Congress has a 7% approval rating. You have lots of political capital to do that.
And there were lots of other little gems in there. I mean, when Biden came back on green jobs,
yeah,
and said bullshit. Yeah. The money you're talking about is, you know, the congressional investigations and your witch hunts. And by the way, here's what they found. Just pushing back like that every time your opponent says something, just shove right back. Just every time, shove right back.
Yep.
Is such a simple thing to remember to do.
Well, and someone mentioned that on Twitter last night, that you really have to just hammer each mole as it pops up.
Right.
If you don't, you will lose. And that was what Barack Obama admitted on the radio this week that he didn't do. He didn't understand that, yes, you do have to say that's not true 500 times in a debate. Well, that gets repetitive. Doesn't matter. You have to do it.
Yeah.
You are stating a falsehood, Mr. Romney. You are, and you know, this idea that it's toxic to say lie and everybody, you know, gets all horrific. It's like you're saying motherfucker. That's, well, all right, fine. There's lots of different ways to say that.
And this is also, remember, this is not new. This was the progressive, other than the progressive complaint, the liberal complaint, our complaint, that Barack Obama didn't come right out of the box with single payer.
Yeah.
If you're going to lose it, then lose it during a negotiation. Lose it when you're bargaining for something else. But don't just give up on it out of the box, because that's the plan I wanted. Mm-hmm. That's the plan you wanted. That's the plan every liberal I know wanted. And you just gave up on it before you even started. That's the major liberal complaint. But the secondary liberal complaint that was extremely damning and completely understandable when you're dealing with technocrats, people I've dealt with all my life. Once you build the program, you just let the marketing go and move on to the next problem. No, dude, once you get – I mean, you had your entire party, Mr. President, running away from your signature accomplishment, and you're not out there selling the shit out of it every day.
And it wasn't until the convention that they started to sell Obamacare, and that really was a huge mistake.
And selling Obamacare required repetition, required you every time you come to a stop, open your mouth and say 26 million college students. And eventually you got on board. But – as a person who has developed programs, designed programs, put things together that are very complicated and require lots of moving parts, and has worked with people who run programs, getting them to brag about them, extracting usable, press releasable data from them is like pulling fucking teeth. They don't like to do it. They want to do their thing and leave all the marketing and selling and bragging and shit to everybody else. But that it is simply... And it's a damning and dooming reflex if you can't get out and brag on your best accomplishments. And if
well,
you can't
I ask prepare- you a question in converse to that? Because to
sure.
me, the past week has shown just how craven the right is in terms of not believing really in anything.
Yes.
The primal scream of the past 2 years for the Republicans has been repeal Obamacare.
Yes, and absolutely.
And then now we have moderate Mitt. Come on out. Oh, I like this, and I like this, and I did this, and I like healthcare for, and I don't want anyone to die, and no one's going to die, and we're going to do, and they were cheering people dying at the debates. That
yes,
was
they were. Yes, they were. But you're
and now you know moderate Mitt is doing better in the polls. So well, just drop that.
Yeah.
I'm amazed to see that our friend Rodney Davis, who's running against David Gill in our own district here in Springfield, Illinois. Took out the repeal Obamacare part of his ad this week. That's not in there anymore. He wants to keep taxes low, but one of his 3 points was repeal Obamacare. That's not in there this week.
Well, I have a really long memory, Blue Gal. I remember when...
You remember 2 weeks ago when he did have repeal Obamacare in his ad?
I remember when we were winning in Iraq, and the only people who thought otherwise were a bunch of America-hating, yeah. traitor,
cheese-eating
surrender
French.
Monkeys.
Yes, right, right.
And I remember when pulling out of Iraq under any circumstances ever would be cutting and running and betraying America.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then but you know what I wrote, I think it was, yeah, in 2006. May I read you a quick quote from 2006?
If you would like, I'd love that.
Okay. This is me, and I'm pointing out the fact that Mitt Romney inherited the Republican base.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute he sewed up the nomination is the minute it stopped mattering to the base what lies he told them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because he wasn't a black man.
And say that again.
From Chicago.
Right. The lies he told them, not the lies he's telling the nation, but
because
he's lying to his base.
Sure. And they don't care.
No, they don't.
They don't care at all. You know why? Because he's not a black man from Chicago who's a Democrat.
Right.
And therefore, it doesn't matter what lies he tells them. It doesn't matter. And I'm going to use some naughty words because I swore a lot more in 2006. But but this is – and my argument has always been the Republican base is no longer – when it comes to politics, is no longer functionally sentient.
Right.
They don't have issues.
They don't have issues. Right.
They're infinitely reprogrammable meat sticks who will believe whatever they're told to believe. And this is what I wrote in 2006. These days, the last Republicans standing are the dregs of the dregs, morally and politically inbred pig people who, without batting an eye, would cash in their children's life insurance to plunk down an extra $10,000 for the special bone speaker implant so they can have Rush and Falwell and Coulter and the rest of the cast of GOP friends talking inside their heads, telling them which slogans to scream minute by minute, 24/7, 365, who will not only believe absolutely any insane dribble the dear leader shits down their throats, but will do so while applauding and squealing for seconds. And with an army of infinitely reprogrammable golem for his audience, the dear leader does not need to worry about the quality or subtlety of his lies.
And that point is brought out perfectly by Mitt Romney going on television and saying he has no plans for any abortion legislation.
Yeah.
His poll numbers should have dropped by 20% among his base if they genuinely believed what they say they believe.
Right.
And they didn't.
And what happens? He pitches one message for the public. Mm-hmm. And at this point, his campaign is actually approaching the point where they are walking his statements back mid-sentence.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Where he says, I have no plans for abortion. And it's like singing around. It's like singing row, row, row your boat. Halfway through the verse, his campaign staff are saying, well, of course, he will implement pro-life legislation. And he will, of course, appoint Supreme Court nominees.
What he should do is he should have like the Chiron screen with like that Stephen Colbert has on The Word. So that along the side, the campaign says what the base wants to hear while he's talking.
His little scrolling denial. Well, but it's because Mitt Romney is who he is. He is a vulture capitalist. He's the closer. He will come in and say whatever he has to say to close the deal. And now he has to close the deal with a bunch of moderates.
Yeah.
But it is vitally important, I believe, that our listeners understand that the Republican base is no longer functionally sentient.
Yep.
They've been that way for a very long time. They believed, cast your mind back to the middle of the Iraq War. Cast your mind back to the 2004 election. The astonishing bullshit they believed. Remember Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11.
Yeah.
Remember there were and they believed that. They still believe that. So the idea that Mitt Romney would simply reverse himself and then re-reverse himself and just make shit up, that would cause them to gag a little bit or look quizzically or puzzle through. No, they're morons. They're reprogrammable meat sticks. And that's who and there might be very nice people in other walks of life. But when it comes to politics, once the guy with the R after his name is settled on, it doesn't matter what he says.
Yeah.
He's got them locked down. And unless he magically transforms himself into a black Democrat from Chicago, Mitt Romney can tell them anything and they'll applaud because they're going to beat the Kenyan usurper. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what you have to understand about the fight we are fighting. Half the battlefield's already lost. That middle bit that we contest over is constantly being polluted by the both sides do it assholes in the media, the Mark Halper and the Tom Brokaws. So that's reality. And the idea that, again, we will look at the latest outrage by Mitt Romney and go, can you believe it? Can you believe what Rush Limbaugh said? My God, can you? Yeah, of course I can. I've watched this come down the pipe for 30 years. Of course I believe it. The question is, what are you going to do about it? And that's what's crucial.
We're 40 minutes into the podcast. I want to make sure we get to a letter that someone sent us this week. And it was one that I hesitated to bring up at this time, because it's critical of the Democratic Party. But I think it's a good thing to recognize that we aren't like that reprogrammable base of the Republicans, that we do think that we do have issues that matter to us, and we have to make difficult choices and sometimes vote against those interests, but we do so consciously.
Yes.
And this was a very good letter from our friend of the podcast, Jay, and I'll read it, and then you had a very good response to him. I did put that in our podcast note. I don't expect you to read your response, but feel free to riff off of it.
Well, you really don't know me, do you?
No, I don't. Yes, I do. All right.
Yeah.
Letter from Jay, and thank you for writing. Good day, sir and madam. I wanted to chime in on the topic that you'd frequently discuss on your podcast, which, by the way, I love. I agree with you when you say the center is now right and the left has moved to where the center used to be, at least in the mainstream media and in politics. There is something that I take issue with, however. The current president, I feel, is a great example of this. I feel that Barack Obama is an 80s Republican. I just wish you and other progressives would point this out more. I guess I am writing this email because you often call out people who say, yes, but the Democrats are just as bad. I feel that this is an accurate statement. It's hard for me to differentiate between the two parties. Obviously, I feel that I side more with liberal and Democratic ideas and talking points. However, I feel that the current Democrats in Washington have abandoned their base and have adopted right-leaning positions to retain power. One example of this is the drug war. Barack Obama has maintained failed policies and has also lied about what he would do with government funding when it comes to medical marijuana. We lock up more people than every other country, and we own one-third of the prisoners on this planet, around 60% in for nonviolent drug charges. When are progressives going to take a stand in Washington over these draconian drug laws and private prisons that profit off of incarcerating our brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers, daughters and sons? So I guess what I'm saying is, yes, I agree that this country has shifted far to the right, but I also feel that it has shifted so far to the right that the Democratic Party is, in fact, bad for this country, because now they are virtually Republicans. Does this make any sense, and what are your positions on the drug war? Uh-huh. Thank you. And you had a very good response to him on a lot of levels. I do want to say, first of all, that I've said this on previous podcasts, but just because we have new listeners, for the record, I was a volunteer for Kennedy 80.
Yep.
And you voted, I think, your first election for John Anderson, right?
I did.
So we have been through this rejection of the Democratic candidate on issues of principle in the past. And I don't know, I can't speak for Driftglass, but what I feel I got for my trouble was a destruction of the PATCO Union and the erasure by Reagan of the ability of labor to strike for 40 years. 30 years, and I regret that. I really do.
Yeah, no, I blame you personally, Blue Gal.
Well, you know, I'm...
Well, me and you, because I voted for John Anderson instead of Jimmy Carter, and I blame myself for Ronald Reagan. You can heap all the blame you want on me for that. I thought Carter was too weak. I was a kid. I was young. I was enthusiastic. I was idealistic. Those are all good things. I looked... you know, into the future, and I saw Ronald Reagan destroying the world, and I saw Jimmy Carter as weak and pusillanimous when it came to things I thought were important. And I thought, well, there's this ideal candidate. He's better than them both. He says all these things I want to hear, and if only everyone in the country would agree with me and throw their votes behind me, then we could change the world, which I have come to notice never happens.
And so I also want to say that once I graduated from high school and went off to college. One semester, John Anderson was teaching at Brandeis, where I was a student. And I had breakfast with John Anderson for about 3 weeks in the cafeteria. And it was wonderful. He's a wonderful man. I adore him. But what happened to our country as a result of the Reagan presidency, we are still getting over. And it's going to take a long time, and we're not over it. So,
the text, the subtext of Jay's letter, is exactly that problem. That the Reagan Revolution, what Reagan did to the press, what the Reagan administration did to the press, what the press did to itself, what liberals immolated during that period, the way he governed, the way he learned from Nixon, the way he learned how to bring racists and disaffected white fundamentalist Christians into the party and turned the party over to crazy people. That's when that hard right turn took place. Mm-hmm. That's when the Southern strategy really kicked in under Reagan. And but the subtext, I agree. Barack Obama is an 80s Republican. I'd say a 50s Republican, but I'm not going to argue over the decade. He is definitely a Eisenhower-ish, both sides, let's moderate, let's compromise, let's find ourselves in the middle. I think actually Nixon in a lot of ways is more liberal than Obama. I think Eisenhower certainly is, but I'm not sure where I'd place him on the timeline. But that both sides do an argument is not that both parties are wrong or bad or impure. They certainly are. The both sides argument that I'd make constantly to the point of tedium, but I feel I must, is simply that for every conservative-driven atrocity, for every Iraq war, for every tax cut, for every filibuster, it is the assertion on the part of our media that the left makes equally awful left-wing atrocities. That as the right has branched off into crazy town, the left has become more extreme in its communist socialist views. And that's crazy. That's fucking crazy.
Yes, it is.
So when Tom Brokaw says the extremes on both sides, he is asserting that while Paul Ryan might be a Randite lunatic who wants to privatize everything and destroy the social safety net, clearly somehow
Rip Glass and Blue Gal are communists who want to fire to the House of Representatives.
We want to nationalize the banks. We want to seize all private property and turn it over to a communal administration. But that's the implicit assertion.
I actually do want to nationalize the bank, Strip Glass.
I know you do. That's why neither of us will ever be president, and neither of us will ever be on television.
And that will never be in the Democratic platform ever. Right. Yeah.
So the two ideas in competition here. One I agree with. Barack Obama is way too conservative from my point of view. He is a Broderian centrist, and his fatal flaw is that he keeps trying to find common ground with people who think finding common ground is a hilarious weakness and will take advantage of it all the time. He's the guy standing on the Russian steppes, waving the treaty as the German tanks roll across it going, "But we had a deal." They don't respect you, Mr. President. They hate you. They want to see you burn. They want to see your administration fail. They want to cripple you and destroy you. And trying to find common ground with them is Lucy in the football. And they're just going to keep jerking you around until you get it through your head that you have to put your foot on their neck and keep it there until they cry uncle.
Well, and I think that's exactly why the Obama campaign, where it is lacking specifics, is lacking specifics. Is they're waiting to see if Lucy is still going to take the football away from them in January.
Yeah.
And I think you and I both have an answer for that.
Yes.
Hell yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to spend the next 2 years getting the house back if you want to get anything done.
And if Jay wants to, I gave him a link to one of my many blog posts. This one's called Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Left. If you Google Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Left, I say exactly that. I say, Mr. President, you are making a huge mistake if you don't realize that the right is out to get you. And your job is to take our battles to them and not sell us out for them, for some fantasy of compromise that will never, ever happen. However, I also told Jay that I could write those sorts of posts every day, but I'm not particularly interested in handing the White House back to the GOP for another 8 years because I lived through Bush.
Yep.
And for liberals who think that spending a lot of time kicking Obama is a great strategy, well, these are the people who learn nothing from Ralph Nader.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I respect single issue voters. I think the situation gets much clearer for purists who only have one issue, because when you only have one issue, then it doesn't matter what Obama's done for gay rights or gay military service or healthcare or equal pay or anything else. Because as long as the Obama administration doesn't 100% support your one issue, then you can get up on your hind legs and say, fuck them. they're a disaster, they're worse than Hitler, et cetera, et cetera. So
let's be clear. We know that we need single issue people. I mean, this is not, I'm not being patronizing here.
No, absolutely not. There
are things where it is worth it. I think what people are doing to stop the XL pipeline and lying in front of machines to make that stop and to keep that carbon in the ground are heroes.
As we've said before.
Absolute heroes.
I want to live in a country where Jeremy Scahill is around and talking on television.
Yep,
I'd much rather live in that country than one where he's not.
Right.
But I would like to point out that for the single issue people, for the people who are like, well, first we'll bring the whole system down, then the people will rise up.
Yeah.
That second part never actually happens. So for the people who, for these people who, when you ask them, okay, now you've deposed Obama, right? Gotten rid of his administration. They've repealed health care. Benjamin Netanyahu is dictating foreign policy directly. Mm-hmm. Grover Norquist is dictating U.S. domestic policy directly. What now? And it's usually some sort of fantasy involving, very vague, usually involving the
now
people.
Now we've planted the seed of revolution, man.
The people will rise up and they'll demand change. And nowhere outside of a Frank Capra movie does that ever actually happen. You know what happens? 8 years of Reagan happens and fucking up unions. 8 years of Bush happens. And it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And it never gets so bad that the people rise up. Now, it could get that bad. But being a liberal, I don't want to see millions of people starve to death. All the people I care about are the people who would be most immediately screwed by a Romney administration. Yep. I do not want to sacrifice. I'm not so abstract and far away and living in a bubble that I'm willing to say, well, you know, you got to kill a few million people. You got to crack a few eggs if you want revolution. And if a bunch of old people and sick people and poor people have to die so that my revolution can take shape, well, that's just the price of history. I'm not that liberal. I'm not that guy. Yeah. And therefore, you're never going to hear me arguing for let's take the whole system down and then reboot it, because that's a good idea, because that always ends well, except it never does. So for people who have this idea that the way to solve our problems is to exacerbate them to the point of collapse. When has that ever been? Think to yourself, and then what happens? Then you seize power because you're the only one left, because you've got more guns and pemmican and distilled water in your basement. What exactly is your post French Revolution strategy for getting a democracy back?
Yep.
And if you don't have one, then maybe you should think a little more practically about trying to make the crappy system we have work a little bit better during your lifetime and pass a little bit of a better system along to your kids and your grandkids.
And it's hard to wait when you know, and liberals are addicted to being actually physically right about things. We are correct about things.
Yeah.
And it's hard when you know that you're right about something and that you're morally right about something to wait for it to happen. You want to just make it happen now. Of course you do. We all do.
For example, with what Jay specifically asked about drug policy.
Drug war. My God, absolutely.
Marijuana should be immediately legalized and controlled like alcohol and cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
Decriminalized almost everything else.
Everyone who's in jail for pot should just be let out. I mean, unbelievable.
Absolutely. Depending on your offense, I mean, there are a whole variety of there's possession, and then there's, you know, you're dealing in gigantic amounts and you had a weapon. But that's
I'm talking about if you're just in jail for having pot on your person.
Gone. Period.
You should be at home.
Yeah.
They never clean out the penthouses in Manhattan. No. And go through all the bedside tables in Manhattan to clean out the pot there and arrest people there. You notice that?
Yeah.
And here's
the problem with advocating that policy. That I absolutely agree. Single issue activists should advocate it. Single issue activists should be furious that federal legislators and Obama administration are not moving at all in this direction.
Yeah.
But here's the practical reality. If I were to run on that platform, I could probably get elected alderman. 49th Ward
of
Chicago, to the very, very liberal ward where I used to live in Chicago.
Yeah.
If I ran statewide in Alabama, I would be run out of state on a rail.
I don't know if you could get statewide in Illinois.
No.
I don't know if you could get elected statewide in Illinois.
I think in 10 years you can. And I think that's the purpose of having an activist. That's why you have abolitionists. You have people on the ground who are pushing and pushing and pushing. And it I wish it were a science, but it's an art. You have to push on the system to the point where it cracks and it moves, but not to the point where it breaks and collapses. And that's my opinion. Now, you might be, again, crash and reboot. That might be your strategy, and that's delightful. But I happen to think that that's a disaster, and it would be a disaster for the people I care most about.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Call me selfish, but that's where my liberalism comes from.
All right, we have to stop there.
Okay.
Thank you for listening, everybody.
Oh, I do want to point out one thing.
Yeah.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Andrew Sullivan.
Oh.
Has made the big move. His big beltway move. He has taken apartments in New York. So he's moved from Washington D.C. to Manhattan. Talk about inbred beltway bullshit. Bless his heart, he makes a fine living. I believe he and his husband have two or three homes, and they live very well. And he is the yappy dog in Tina Brown's purse, you know?
Yeah.
But the idea that Andrew Sullivan, whose experience of conservatism consists of worshiping Ronald Reagan, living in D.C., now living in D.C. and New York, and opining about the rest of the country as if he knew what the fuck he's talking about.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things he and I agree on. But his constant state of astonishment that the movement that he's devoted his life to for the last 30 years is full of fundamentalists and crazy people. Oh, my God. Look at all these fundamentalists. How can they possibly believe this stuff? Oh, my God. It's full of racists. How can they possibly say this stuff? Is a comment on the absolute intellectual bankruptcy of the brain cast of the Republican Party. Because people like him and David Brooks and David Frum have spent their entire lives working for a movement that they now confess they never understood in the first place. And yet,
you know, I really would like to write a letter to Tina Brown and tell her how fantastic it would be to send Andrew Sullivan to Mississippi, to rural Mississippi, white Mississippi, for a month.
Just let him do some
reporting. Let him do some reporting. Yeah.
And I think, I think it's a wonderful idea, period. I'm not being facetious. I absolutely agree that sticking him on a bus and letting him roll through the South and interview real people and find out what they really think. Have him go to banks, have him go to cafes, have him talk whatever he wants to talk to them, and then come back and tell us what America's really like would be a fantastic idea. I would read that.
We're going to stop there.
Okay.
Thank you so much for listening. You can listen to our podcast at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, at our Facebook page. I'm Frances Langham on Facebook, on iTunes, and through our fabulous app available at the iTunes Store. We're on the amazing Stitcher Radio. And by the way, iTunes.
Yeah.
We didn't get a chance to talk about this.
Dude.
Oh. iTunes. We have no idea this week how many people are listening to us because the iTunes podcast app has apparently screwed up everything with everyone's stats everywhere. And our really good podcast provider, Buzzsprout, that does really good customer service, I wrote to them and said, something's really wrong with our stats. And they said, yeah, we're not telling you how many people are listening to you on iTunes anymore until iTunes fixes their podcast app. So, and that's like 85% of our listeners. So we're sorry. We don't know. We thank you for listening, but we don't know how many people are listening to us anymore.
Well, and this has a direct effect on our
plan. Your mood.
Well, on my mood, I got over the whole morning hit wood. Again, Daily Coast front page to thing of mine last night. That was really nice of him. That was really cool. Thank you, Meteor Blades. And it's a sugar high. But, our plan is to become the media, the new media. That's sort of our low-end strategy, our long-term strategy. But to do that, we actually have to have decent data to work from.
Yeah.
If we're going to go – let me put it this way. On a practical level, if we're going to go to a bunch of college radio stations and say we'd like to come on your show, we'd like to be a part of your show, we'd like to have an hour a week, we'd like to do this and that, and here are our statistics. We can bring an audience to this program that is X, Y, and Z. We actually have to know how many people listen to us. And – if our most prolific delivery system, which is iTunes, is completely screwed up to the point where our podcast provider won't count their stats anymore, that actually fucks us up really badly.
Yeah. So iTunes, get your shit together. That's what we want to say.
Yeah.
We're on Netroots Radio from 6 to 7 Pacific and 9 to 10 Eastern on netrootsradio.blogspot.com. If you're, by the way, if you're listening on an iPhone or iPod, Stitcher Radio if you listen to more than one podcast, we'd love for you to have our app. But if you listen to more than one podcast, Stitcher Radio is also a good app, and it's free. Both are free. You can contribute to the podcast. And we got a wonderful email from a listener in Las Vegas this week, and she said, I was cruising for liberal podcast. I found your show, loving it. So today I'm proud to say I have finally donated, not much, but I plan to make it a part of my budget. Viva Las Vegas, and thanks for the show. Oh, thank you so much. We really appreciate you. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter or a contribution to our P.O. box. And by the way, we also want to thank the person that sent us a pumpkin carving kit in the mail. We got that yesterday.
You did.
Thank you. Our P.O. box is P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. Next week is episode 150 of our podcast, and our Thanksgiving show coming up in November will be reading your emails on the air. So do send us emails. We love hearing from you and having your ideas on what you'd like to discuss at the podcast.
And we haven't forgotten NAFTA. So
no, we haven't forgotten NAFTA. Well, we haven't forgotten NAFTA. We haven't forgotten Simpson Bowls. We haven't forgotten Simpson Bowls. We're going to do a show on Simpson Bowls. Probably after the election, like everyone else. Every week at our Facebook page and our podcast website, we post a picture of an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is George. And George is stretched out next to a granddaughter, we are told. It looks very warm there, George, and definitely knows how to snuggle. So go over to our Facebook page or our website at professionalleft.blogspot.com and check out our internet kitty, George. Please feel free to send us an internet kitty. Make sure that if you send us a picture of your internet kitty, that you put as the subject line of your email, internet kitty, so we know that that's what that is. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your letter or email on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties would like Barack Obama to take 2 Joe Biden pills and call them in the morning.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.